So fast forward to 1943, and now the Supreme Court is looking at a confusion of goods in the context of a fiduciary that had control over an estate funds, and you have a long lost beneficiary that comes forward and claims those funds. So Eaton, in this case, had managed his mother's trust, had commingled the assets from the trust with his own, had made investments, spent the money, and failed to keep any records, essentially treated the funds as if they were his own. A long-lost niece comes forward and says, I'd like my interest, sues, and the court finds that there's been a confusion of all of these assets. And again, the court now here recognizes that the burden shifts on the person who created the confusion, right? In this case, you didn't have good records. You had the commingling of the funds. And the court says that once that happens, and if you can't show your own, if you can't show your share, then you're liable for the entire mass, right? The entire mass will be awarded to the beneficiary. So this is this remedy that the plaintiff would be entitled to if once the burden shifts to the defendant, if the defendant can't say, okay, this is what's yours and this is what's mine, you can't do it with certainty or reasonable certainty, then you're liable for the entire mass. So now this concept of confusion of goods and this concept of keeping good records, we see that pour over in the Natural Resources Code. And in the 30s, the legislature passes the Texas Natural Resources Code 88.052, requiring accurate measurement of oil and gas and the requirement of the preservation of records. And so when we look at the legislative history of that statute, the perception at the time was that, and the legislature remarks that a great many landowners of the state are being defrauded of their property royalty interest in oil and gas. So here the legislature is saying, well, we need to make sure that there are accurate measurements of the amount of oil and gas. And I think that there's a recognition that sometimes these hydrocarbons, once they're being produced, have to be brought together. They've got to be sold at the market. So what we see that even as far back as 1940, and citing to this Ortiz versus Lutz case from Texarkana, that royalty owners, even as far back as 1940, were arguing that if hydrocarbons were being commingled, that they would be entitled to recover the entire mass. Now, in Ortiz versus Lutz, the court held that commingling wasn't applicable because the jury could determine a reasonable certain estimate of the amount that had come off the property. So a few years later, in 1947, the Supreme Court considers the Moores versus Richardson case. And Moores involved royalty owners that had wells in Nueces County. Richardson was operating several wells in Nueces County. And then at some point, the operators adjoining wells their production level started to drop off. And the operator installed these secret pipelines from one lease over to the adjoining leases to boost the production numbers. Okay, so when Morris found out about that, he brings suit. It turns out that there weren't any accurate records kept of the production that had been piped off the lease. And the Court of Appeals recognizes, well, once you've commingled all this production, you can't unscramble that commingled mass, right? And the court recognizes that it was caused by the willful misconduct of the defendant and its predecessors, and applied the commingling doctrine. So the appellate court instructs the trial court that it's because there was this fraudulent commingling and the confusion, the requirement should be that the commingler now has to establish clearly and distinctly the amount that was run from the lease. And if not, then they will be saddled or burdened with having to pay for the entire 1/16th of production from all the wells and not just from his particular well. So this clear and distinct standard is what we're left with after the Morse case. And of course, you have a situation where you have this fraud claim where this connection was done secretly. Goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court says, yes, this is this was the right way to handle this case. This is a case that where commingling should be applied. Apparently, there was some conflicting evidence of whether some of the wells were actually connected to the plaintiff's wells, and so the court remanded it to determine that ultimate fact issue. So here we have a little chart that tries to graphically describe what was going on in the ground on Morse versus Richardson. So you have the plaintiff's lease, you have their production, you have the pipelines that were running to different off-lease wells. And if you look at the structure where you have a